All right, here we go. As promised, we have in studio the Met hierarchy, Jeff Wilpon, the new general manager, who's already been busy, Brody Van Wagenen, and the Met manager, Mickey Callaway. Now, you I know forever, Jeff, so I'll say hello to the other two guys first. We've done one interview already, Brody, so welcome. Nice to see you.
Thank you.
And Mickey, I've never met you before, so welcome. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to have everybody here. I'll start with you, Jeff, because you made the news yesterday. I got a call yesterday, and someone says, can you believe the Met owner is in Rwanda? I'm like, I didn't know he was in Rwanda. I mean, so what's going on? So you went to Rwanda, which is not a short trip.
No. My wife's bucket list to go trekking for gorillas, I promise it would be a slow time, and sure enough, Brody broke that up pretty good.
And you can get criticized for going to Rwanda, too. Like, why is the Met manager owner in Rwanda? I said, who cares? You can go wherever he wants on vacation. What do they care? They think you can't do business when you're there. Obviously, you can take a phone call even from there, right? The cell phone works there, right?
Cell phone worked. I had a satellite phone. We got, Brody can attest, we were on the phone a bunch. But, you know, it's his job to do this work and then bring it to us to get it finalized.
All right. Already a big move. A fast press conference yesterday. I mean, why was he here? He was here and gone. It was like 10 minutes. He was back on. He was back in the air and gone. I'll start with you, Brody. This deal, what attracted you so much to this deal off the bat, especially Robinson Cano at this stage?
Well, I think the key was we had some real needs when we entered the offseason. I think last time we spoke, we had a few shopping items that we had to get done. And so being able to get a middle-of-the-order bat and get somebody the bullpen that could close out our games was a massive win for us to be able to start the pursuits and to be able to get a chance to have a lot more clarity in what our team looks like going forward. And then on the Cano front, I had personal history with him. I believe in the guy. He had history here in New York, and he loves playing here. And I think he was – when he had to make a decision about waiving his no-trade clause, I think it was a pretty quick conversation.
I know Robinson Cano really well from the days he was here with the Yankees. I got to know him well because he was kind of the guy who followed A-Rod around everywhere, and he was, you know, A-Rod was like his mentor. So I used to do a lot of interviews with him. He's a great kid, and now he's not a kid anymore. He's been around forever. Any trepidation at all with the mileage that he has as a player, 36 with over 2,000 games played, whatever went on this year with his drug situation, which I don't know if that was masking something else or not. I don't really care. But just the whole idea of a player coming back to a town at that age, middle infielder, with that much tread off the tire, having played almost 2,050 games, which is a lot of baseball.
A lot of games. It's funny. You can talk about, you know, most people say players that don't play all the time. They lack durability.
Right.
So we actually still view the durability as a good thing for him. He knows how to train himself, and if you know you know Robbie well, he loves to play the game, and he loves to have fun out there. So I think getting a little shot of adrenaline coming back to New York, we'll see him on the field a lot.
Jeff, anything about Cano? Did any of it give you any pause? Any of the Cano stuff? The idea of the age, his lifestyle. You know, the drugs last year. Any of it bother you? No.
I mean, I spoke to Brody about all of it, and it all came under consideration. Obviously, the money's coming back and getting off the couple salaries to bring his AAV down was a big consideration. But you know. As I said yesterday in the press conference, I don't consider him a drug cheat.
Okay. Mickey, let me get to the closer for you. I mean, the closer for you, because last year you talked about a lot about how it would handle bullpen and what you would do with the bullpen. Now you got a guy, and I like this kind of bullpen. I like having a guy who you build everything up to one guy. I don't like this whole where everybody shares every role. Do you like this kind of bullpen when you have this kind of guy more than having a bullpen by committee?
I think we're very aware of the success he had in that closer's role next year. And our goal is to always put everybody in a position to have success. And if that's going to be him closing the ninth, then, you know, we're definitely going to listen to what the player has to say. You know, I think that Brody's on the same page as I am. It's about the players. And we want to put them in a good position to succeed. And he's very comfortable in pitching in that ninth inning. So we're definitely going to be in communication with him constantly about what he sees best fit for us.
Let me ask you one thing going back to last year, Mickey. Last year, you get off fast in April, really fast. You close well in September, you had an 18-10 September. The two killer months, you went 15-39. in May and June? Looking back, what happened in May and June?
Yeah, obviously, I think the main thing when I look back, not only did we have some injuries, the thing that hurt us the most is when we lost our catchers back-to-back days. You know, we're built on pitching, and we lost our catchers, and that really hurt us. I don't think it necessarily affected this guy's play or that guy's play, but I think it affected our whole ball club at the time, and just the general sense of, oh, man, we lost two of our catchers, and a catcher is a huge position, as we all know, and we're taking that into consideration this winter. So I think that was the biggest the blow to us last year. And we had a group that was trying to come together. You know, we started off real fast, like you said. We weren't going to keep that pace. And then things went way south. I was really proud of how the guys came back and they continued to play hard and we finished strong. We have some really good talent. And if we can add to it like Brody already has, we're in a good spot moving forward.
How about learning the National League last year? You got Riggleman this year, who I love, is a very good guy. I've happened to know him a very long time, too, who is, I think, a superb baseball guy, a great, not a big ego guy, great guy. Was that a learning curve in the National League for you last year?
It was, and you're right about Riggleman. He is
a great guy,
thoughtful,
yeah. Good baseball guy. But was it a learning curve for you last year?
It was definitely a learning curve. I learned a ton. I think our whole staff learned a ton. We had, some American League.
You didn't have a lot of National League guys on your staff. You didn't.
We didn't. Yeah. So I think we recognized that, that we needed that, and that's why we went out and got Riggleman. But I learned a ton, and I still learn a ton every day. I learned a ton at dinner with Robinson Cano the other night. I mean, he is a baseball guy, and I think that's going to be one of the most valuable things that he's going to bring to our ball club is that veteran leadership and a guy that just – thinks about winning and baseball constantly.
Jeff, so, before I get specific about needs and everything else, let me start with you, big picture. Brody's obviously been aggressive, and he's talked very aggressively since he took the job. And let me go back to you for a second, because you had a very big job, and now you took this job. When you made that transition, was that a tough thing, or was that an easy thing to jump from a very successful position you were in every way, financially and every other way, into this position? Or was it just that good a challenge?
Well, I think it was a hard decision because when you do something for 18 years that you love to do, you know, Mickey talked about having it be about the players. That was my mindset there. But when we looked at what this opportunity could be at this moment, this time in the city, Jeff and I had lots of conversations about what the potential was and how I could fit into it. And it was an opportunity that it was too good to pass up. And you know, while it's always difficult to tell clients you're not going to work with them anymore, this was something that I think I was more than excited to jump in headfirst into.
That's Brody Van Wagenen, and the general manager, of course, Mickey Callaway here too, and Jeff Wilpon. Jeff, the big picture right now, the fans are excited by the clearly excited by the way Brody's spoken, and he's been very aggressive. They love that. The first trade you made was a very it wasn't any minor trade; it was a big splash. Bringing back, you know, a couple of very prominent players, including Robinson Cano. What is the parameters? What is the picture as far as what's on the table and what's not in terms of spending and in free agency and everything else going on?
Well, I think Brody and I have an understanding of where we are with the payroll right now and what he can expand it to. You know, there are some monies coming back from insurance stuff that we talked about using. And obviously this trade right here, the great thing about it was close to neutral for us in terms of adding any dollars. So he still has a lot of leeway and a lot of runway to go do some other things, be it free agent or additional trades.
But you're not looking to go after the mega guy in free agency. You're not chasing those big. There's a couple of very big pieces out there. You're not chasing those guys.
I haven't heard about those, but I think you can ask Brody.
Okay, Brody, are you chasing those guys?
There's a couple of very expensive
pieces there. Are those on the table?
And they're good players. I think relative of very expensive. I think there's a lot of expensive players.
Well,
out
how about
there,
the big two?
The two big boys do not have offers from us quite yet.
Is that a possibility?
I think we'll always look, and I've said this, you know, and it's not a joke, but we'll always try to be open-minded. I think clearly if we try to operate under the parameters that Jeff and I have, we'll have to be really creative to move some money around to make those guys work. But clearly they're generational type players that could work on any club, including ours.
Before I ask you the rest of your list, because you gave your list out, what's your list, Mickey? What do you need for this team to be better next year?
Yeah, I think that for us to succeed, we need to go out and figure out how we can improve our team the best. And you can have a list or whatever, but it comes down to who's available and what you can get. So I think that I'm happy that Brody's going to be thoughtful in all of those things. And
scoring ones wasn't easy for you last year.
We need a more dynamic offense. I think that we're trying to address that in several ways, and we're going to continue to this offseason. So I loved watching Boston in the World Series. You know, driving in runs, putting the ball in play, not just a homer or a strikeout.
Well, it was role players who were unbelievable. I mean, they got Pierce. He was great. He was like, he was Leyritz plus. Eovaldi was great. Jackie Bradley got a million big hits at the bottom of the order. So they really used the whole lineup.
They really did. You know, I think they're doing a great job of developing those hitters and what they think about when they're swinging the bat. And, I think we could do a little bit better job of that move.
Brody, what's on the shopping list right now? What's at the top of the list? We know we hear about the catcher and obviously one prominent catcher. But right now, what's on your wish list right now in terms of position?
Well, I'm reading all the comments that people are sending me on Twitter.
Okay.
It's been good.
And they go in one ear and out the other. They have been really creative.
You know
the old statement. You know what? If you let the fans make the decisions, you'll be sitting with them. Okay?
Yes, but they have not been shy. So we've seen a lot of different ideas.
They're not shy. Yes. We know that. Yes. I can promise you they're not shy. But what about your wish list right now?
Yeah, look, I think that we've talked about it. I mean, the ability to give Mickey some more weapons to score runs is important. And we have to have more depth. You know, he needs to have a bench and he needs to have versatility on the roster that's going to give him options to mix and match players, to give some of our guys some days off. You talked about Cano and his age. We don't want him to have to play 150 games anymore. You know, that's too much.
You'll have trouble getting him out of the lineup, though.
That's a good thing. I hope we have to fight and pull everybody off the lineup. But depth is going to be something we're going to want to try to address. We're going to want to try to add some more offense in the middle of the lineup. And whether that comes in the infield, whether that comes in the outfield, I think we probably have one too many left-handed bats in the middle of the lineup to not have a righty to offset it. So I think we'll try to get some more balance. We're really hopeful that Peter Alonso can be some of that balance coming off a great season in the minor leagues last year. And with his power, if it develops the way we think it can, we've got some real
thunder. What do you do with McNeil now that you have Cano?
McNeil is a crucial guy. We have
play him at third base. Is that the give him a chance to play third base? I mean, what's the plan?
I think we can play him at multiple positions. You know, I almost see him, a Ben Zobrist type that can go.
Oh, really?
Play anywhere,
infield and outfield.
I think he can play in the outfield. He's done it in the past. He's got a passion for it. We'll have to see exactly what he can do when spring training comes around. But I think that we can keep all options open with him because he can play multiple positions and he can swing the bat.
Catcher, obviously.
Just back to McNeil, if you don't mind, one second. It's been interesting because Seattle really wanted him to be included in the deal, and we resisted.
Was he in the deal at one point?
He was in their proposals,
okay.
but he wasn't in ours. But they really wanted to get him, and what we found in terms of our resistance, from our analytics guys to what Mickey just described in a Zobrist-type player to the way the other teams, now that we kept him, have been knocking down our door, he becomes more valuable to us every day. And I think that he can be in the outfield for us. He can be a guy that gets a lot of at-bats the way teams are using their extra guys now.
Is there any guy in the everyday lineup that you would be against moving in the right deal? Is there anybody that you would – I mean, there's obviously pitchers that you have on that level, but is there a player on that level?
Well, I think what we've done here, I think we talked a lot about trying to win in 2019. Jeff's talked about the versatility or payroll flexibility we have now. But what we have the opportunity now is we've got a core group of guys with Cano for 5 years, with Diaz for 4 years in the bullpen. We've got Lugo and Gesellman all have 4-plus years with us. Rosario has 5 years. Nimmo has 4. Conforto has 3. So we're starting to look at a pretty long runway to be competitive. So for us to move any of those guys off of a big league roster, we don't want to create holes somewhere else. So that's why I talk about trying to be additive, not pulling pieces away.
Okay. And catcher is obviously a big part of this. Is it position specific as far as say? When we can get obvious catcher, center field, bullpen, et cetera, is it is it going to be you looking for versatility, as Mickey said, or are you going to be position specific here?
Well, I think you wanted us to get a four-hole hitter last time we talked.
You need a big right-hander. You just got a three-hole hitter.
Right. We got the three-hole hitter.
You need a big right-handed four-hole hitter.
Yeah, yes. I didn't want to come here empty-pocketed.
That's it. You brought a three-hitter. You brought your three-hitter. You can bat him two or three. I know these new guys like to bat guys two instead of three. So
that's his job.
But you can bat him two or three, which that 2-3 thing drives me crazy. But the bottom line is, you need a right-handed batter with power on this team, clearly.
We do.
And Cespedes, I don't know. Well, let's start there. What is the plan for? Do you expect to see Cespedes next year?
You guys want to go?
Jeff, do you expect to see Cespedes?
We certainly hope to see him.
At some point? I mean, what's realistic?
I think realistic the second half of the season.
Okay.
Sometime, but it could be longer, Mike. This is something that, you know, it's a tough operation. And having
Do you consider him as part of your plan this year, or is he outside your plan?
Yeah, look, the way we view him is the ultimate trade deadline piece. We saw what he did in 2015.
Oh, yeah. He was as good as anybody in the league. Yes.
And so the idea is if we can create depth and create a team that can win without him, he comes in and it's a shot in the arm that we can't replace.
But okay.
So yeah, we've got, I feel like, a three-hole hitter now. Conforto is real power from the left side. Frazier, if he can stay healthy this year, this guy's had, I think he and Josh Donaldson have had more home runs at third base than anybody in baseball over the last 5 years. So that's a power bat that we're counting on if Alonso can come on. But if we can get another right-handed bat, you know, sometimes that may have to come in this market behind the plate, or we can go find somebody that can put the ball in play and create havoc on the bases. That may have to come from the outfield. But we'll keep an open mind.
Mickey, let me get to Conforto for a second. There's the old adage, don't ever believe what you see in April and September. He had a huge September. That got his stats up. He had 30 RBIs out of his 82. He had 10 homers in September. He had a lot of homers late. He did not have a great year, and then he got out red hot. Should we buy what we saw in September for him? What changed for him in September?
I think he finally got healthy. You know, when
so the shoulder was a problem, you think?
It was. I think that any time you're coming off of an injury, there's a period where you're adjusting, whether it's, you know, getting the feel for your swing or the mechanics of getting through something. But I think what took its toll more than anything is missing spring training. And we saw it. Swarzak missed spring training. Vargas missed spring training. Conforto missed spring training. And they all struggled, you know, out of the gate. And longer that he got away from that injury and got more comfortable with more at-bats, he got better and better as the season went on. So I think you can believe it. He's done it before at the right times of the season, other than September, and he's a good hitter. I mean, you just sit there, you know, being a pitching guy, you sit there and you watch how he covers the ball and where guys try to throw him and what he can do with the barrel of the bat. It's pretty impressive. So he's definitely a great hitter.
That's Mickey Callaway, of course. Jeff, you can feel your pockets start to get pinched as I bring this guy up. You had the Indians 2 years ago, and they set records. Last year, you had a starting pitcher, he set records. What did you tweak, if anything, with DeGrom, and how would you put DeGrom's year in perspective that you got to watch last year?
I think DeGrom was going to have this year no matter what.
Did you change anything?
Dave Island worked with
him. Oh, you and Dave.
Extension.
Did you change anything?
They really talked a lot about getting his arm out and getting it on time, and that's it. DeGrom was set.
He was ready.
Kluber course where he finally got to that 200 inning mark.
Right.
He was getting more and more confidence. He kept on growing as a pitcher, and he's got electric stuff.
Did you ever see anybody pitch as well as he did last year?
Not
consistently, right?
Not consistently.
I mean, he never had a bad start. I mean, the guy was unbelievable.
The one bad start.
You can feel that. They can feel that money, Jeff, leaving that pocket right now. You know that.
I mean, he deserves it. He's a great pitcher.
He does. That's it. You know, anybody could be, especially you could be his agent. Now, how do you? If I'm DeGrom, okay, and I've always, you know, you just talked to our guy. I've always been one to negotiate fiercely. So, if I'm DeGrom, I love what happened yesterday. If I'm representing DeGrom, I love what happened yesterday with Corbin getting that crazy money. Plus, I want to see how I'm going to say, let's see where my team is right now with where arbitration is. What number we come up with, Mons? What was the highest guy? You probably know off the top of your head. What was it? 15-6-6 starting pitcher got an arbitration. Arrieta, is that the high? 15-66?
Yep.
So if I'm DeGrom, I'm saying, let's see here. I want to see. Put your loyalty on the table. From that standpoint, I'll go to you first. How do you deal with DeGrom right now?
Well, I'll let somebody else negotiate his arbitration contract.
Okay.
I will recuse myself from that one.
Right.
But I'm impressed.
I don't know how anybody could win against them in arbitration, considering last year's historic. But the point is, do you deal with them short-term? Do you deal with them long-term? Owner, general manager, what do you do with DeGrom?
I think we talked about both. And Brody's putting some stuff together, and he's got to recuse himself through certain things because he represented them. But Jake's a great young man. You know, couldn't be a better teammate. People love him around the clubhouse. We'd like to see him stay here long-term.
Okay. So there will be a long-term offer made to DeGrom?
I'm sure there'll be an offer. How long-term that is, that's up to us to figure out. But
yeah, and I think, Mike, we have a plan.
Okay.
And Jeff and I are on the same page with what our short-term flexibility is. But, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. We don't talk about having players on our team for 4 and 5 years without having Jacob in uniform beyond 2 years. So our goal will be to try to extend that, extend that relationship, and hopefully he can continue to be a huge part of what we're doing.
So I think clearly, obviously, he's the centerpiece now. He's the easy one. Syndergaard, there's been a lot of talk about Syndergaard. How do you view Syndergaard?
I think he's one of our aces. You know, we look and talk about him all the time. He has been one of the top five, top 10 pitchers in the game. Even when he misses time, he still puts together seasons that have that type of value for us. So, you know, when we line up, and, you know, Mickey can talk more about this too, but when we line up the five guys that we have, along with Lugo as a potential sixth guy, if we need to pull him back in for certain periods of time, it's going to be hard for people to match up with us. And so by making the Cano deal, bringing in Diaz, it's going to be really, really hard to imagine subtracting from Noah, Wheeler, DeGrom, Mats and Vargas. And so if we do, you know, it's probably going to be looking to get better and not take away from it.
And as far as Syndergaard in a trade, is it fair to say it would take something special to trade Syndergaard?
That is more than fair.
More than fair. How are you on the Syndergaard trade front?
I'm the same way. I said it from the beginning. Would we consider it? Yeah, I think Brody's going to consider everything. But it has to be outsized in our, you know, hopefully in our favor. I mean, there's 29 other very smart baseball people out there, so it's never going to be too lopsided, but it has to fill the needs that he wants to fill.
It's funny. Terry Collins said to me last December that he thought Syndergaard was going to win the Cy Young last year, okay? Obviously, it was DeGrom. Mickey, put Syndergaard in some perspective for me here.
Yeah, he's a heck of a pitcher. You know, the one part of his game that needs to improve is controlling the running game, and we're working diligently on that. If he can do that, you're going to see a 2 ERA. You know, the only runs that scored off him last year was when a guy stole a base and then they got a little bloop hit or a CNI single, and then the guy scored. So he can be every bit as good as what Wheeler did the second half, as what DeGrom did for the whole year. And we're excited that he's a Met, obviously.
You guys get paid, or any sport. This is the toughest evaluation. When you look at Wheeler, is Wheeler the second half of last year, or is he not? You know, like the Yankees have to look at that first baseman they got, Voit, who had a 1,000 OPS. Is he a one-hit wonder, or is he the real thing? Is Wheeler a one-hit wonder, Mickey, or is he the real thing?
You know, I believe in players, and I believe once they've done something special, like,
I mean, 10
did,
and 1 in his last 15 starts. Yeah. I mean,
he's
sensational.
Not gonna go right. 22 and 2 next.
But he was great down. He looked like an ace the second half of the season.
Depends how many runs we scored for.
He made some significant adjustments.
Right.
With Dave Island, they did a great
job.
He was fantastic. And he's got electric stuff. So anything's possible when you have that kind of stuff and the ability to throw the ball over the plate like he does.
So what we saw in the second half, we can – and listen, I'm not talking about record, because record obviously is based on what, you know, what happens. But I'm just talking about performance. His performance last 15 starts was lights out.
It was lights out.
You're expecting – you think that's the real Wheeler, like it's finally – everything's
together. I think that's more the real Wheeler on who he can be than what we've seen in the past, for sure.
And I think people forget about Zach is this guy was a first-round draft pick. He was an uber
great
prospect
kid
coming
too.
Through.
Great kid.
I think he was acquired in the Beltran deal, right?
What comes first, success or confidence? And I think he got both of those the second half of last year.
And for pitchers, it's so many things. It's success, confidence, it's right place, right time, and it's also staying healthy, I mean, which is so hard for pitchers. I mean, as you know, I mean, it's crazy how hard it is for pitchers. Somebody come up with a way that pitchers stay healthy. I mean, they make a lot of money. I mean, how many pitchers stay? It's so hard to keep pitchers healthy.
Yeah, the other part I think that Wheeler had and our staff overall is starting to come together as a group is that he picked up on the success that DeGrom was having. He saw they would watch each other's bullpens and they would talk about pitch mix and they would talk about how to improve. And I think if we can create that across all 25 guys on our team, then we're going to have something special. And hopefully, you know, Zach can be an influence on the next guy in line.
Mickey, your season was a tough season last year. You got beat up pretty hard early in the season, okay? I mean, you had a lot of crazy stuff happen. The team hit a terrible pothole. But it finished, it finished in obscurity while the Yankees won 100 games, but it finished well. It didn't give up. It didn't go out and lose 110 games. And it was dreadful there for a while. What do you take from the finish? Is the finish important to you, or is it really something that you start with a clean slate and it's not that important to you?
It is important. I think it's important because we saw the character that our players have, and it's them. They didn't give up. They went out there every day, and they continued to try to improve and continue to play the game the right way. So that's momentum going into this year. It gave our ownership group a sense that, hey, we can win with this core group that performed down the stretch and probably, you know, made a better season than we were looking forward to. It's when we hit that down spell, it's hard to come out of, and I'm proud of the way those players did that. And to their credit, to a man, they went out there every day and they played the game the right way.
That's Mickey Callaway, of course, Brody Van Wagenen, and Jeff Wilpon here. Where are you right now as you get ready for the winter meetings? Where were you, and what does this trade elevate you? Like, how much did this one trade make you better, and how much more do you need to do to be competitive?
Well, we're going to keep going. I think what's going to happen now is Jeff was in the jungle last week. We're gonna pull him into the jungle that is the winter meeting. So we're dragging him with him. He's going to be at our side. And, you know, the goal is to continue to be aggressive. And I think we are, you know, simultaneously going down multiple trade fronts, multiple trade conversations. We've picked up our dialogue with free agents over the course of the last 5 days. And now that we saw the deal coming to a close with the Diaz and the Cano deal, we feel like, okay, let's ramp up our free agent pursuits and see what we can do, and, you know, continue to have fun.
And the when you look at it, do you have are you very position specific here, catcher? I mean, we know the positions of need and where you can move guys around. Obviously, you got more work to do in the bullpen in front of your now closer. You have obviously a need for a right-handed bat. You could use a center fielder if you decide to go with that position, where obviously, and catcher is a very big key for you. You really need to elevate, as Mickey said, elevate it to catcher position.
Yeah. So you mentioned bullpen too. We haven't talked a whole lot about that.
Critical. Yes,
we feel really good about what we just did, but we definitely need.
Well, how do
some
you view? Let me
help.
Just interrupt for 1 second. Yeah. How do you view Gesellman and Lugo? Do you see them as swing? You see them as starters? You see them in the pen? What do you want to do with them?
You know, I think Gesellman, I think at this point you can lock him into your bullpen.
Okay.
And, I can't say that there's an inning that is going to be specific for him.
But you see him as as a bullpen guy, not as a spot starter.
I do.
And what about Lugo?
Lugo, I think he can go either way. I think you can slide.
What do you prefer
him?
Do you prefer him in any role? Lugo reminds me of Ramiro Mendoza a little bit. He can pitch out of every role. He really can.
That's a great call. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think he can slide in and do whatever you want. And
he's a gamer, too.
It depends on what your team needs, and he's willing to do it.
But what would you prefer him as? You want him as an extra starter, or would you prefer him in the pen?
At this point, with the way our roster is right now, I prefer him as a bullpen piece.
Okay. So that gives you a couple of guys that we know have quality arms, those two. They're good pitchers. Especially Lugo. I like Lugo better, but, I mean, those two, they're solid pitchers. So you start from there. I mean, obviously, you need a couple of guys to set up for your closer.
We do, and we need some left-handed help.
Yes. Now,
the beauty of Lugo is that he can give us multiple innings, which is, you know, increasingly more valuable in the game right now. But if we can go get some left-handed help, Zamora did a really nice job. We're counting on him. But if we can add some left-handed matchups that Mickey can go run with, that's going to be a priority.
What is the feeling about Rosario here? Where is he, and what do you think of this guy?
He's a big part of it. I mean, Mickey, you can talk about from a lineup construction.
He came on offensively a lot. Extra base hits, some power. He came on a lot at the end of the season last year.
He made some significant adjustments and made some significant progress for us.
And he's still a kid, right?
Oh, my God.
Yes.
I love his energy. He comes to play every day. He's like Reyes was back in his heyday. And he's going to continue to improve. He wants to learn. He wants to be better. He works. He can play every single day. He's doing a great job of covering more pitches, laying off things in the dirt. There's still going to be some swing and miss this next year. There's still going to be some chase. But he's getting better and better, and that's what you want from a young player, is to see that significant progress. He made it, and he's going to continue to improve. I think the sky's the limit for him.
So you like him as an everyday shortstop? Okay.
Absolutely. And we like his speed. Right. We like his power. He's got high motor, as we call it. And I think
he's got good power.
And I think he's really going to benefit from Robinson Cano is going to be an influence on him. I think the fact that those two guys can be playing up the middle every day, I think Rosario will understand how to succeed in this environment. And I think Rosario will help Robbie in terms of his energy.
I know the 28-year-old Cano would have been an influence. You know, I don't know about the 36. I don't know if Robbie goes out like he used to. He used to go out a lot. He and Melky, boy, they used to go out all the time. I don't want to talk to the owner about that, but we all know they went out all the time. Robinson Cano, I don't know how he did it. I mean, that guy is crazy. But he never missed a game. That was the best thing about him. The guy, he played every day and played on a high level, too. Great hands Cano has. I mean, just as you guys know, I mean, especially you know him very well, and so do you. You watch him play. What a good hitter he is. I mean, obviously helped by Yankee Stadium a little bit power-wise, but what a tremendous hitter he is. Really is.
Tremendous hitter, and I think the fact that he showed that same bat in Seattle, where Safeco is similar to our ballpark,
right.
It's not an easy place to
hit. And he hit 39 homers 2 years ago. That's a lot for him. But I mean, he didn't hit every year out there that many homers. But I always think it's tough when you are a lefty and you leave Yankee Stadium. It's tough. It really is, you know? Because you're going to get so many – you're going to get – if you're a contact guy, you're going to get 10 easy ones in Yankee Stadium. That's all there is to it, you know, where they just fly balls that go out of the ballpark. I mean, so, but as far as Rosario, what's your thoughts on Rosario?
I echo what they said already, but let me go back to Cano for a second. We had dinner with him the other night, and I didn't realize what kind of student of the game he was.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible baseball knowledge. I know he was in to see Brody today to talk about roster construction and everything. I think he wants Brody's job at some point. But it was really neat to see and how he wants to do things. I think he was brought up the right way by A-Rod and followed him around for a while, good or bad, however you want to look at that, Mike. But
yeah,
I think
you know,
he's,
it's
he's
funny.
A student of the game.
You know, A-Rod's is an interesting one because the one thing A-Rod believed in is work. He liked to work a lot early in the day. He's a big work guy. And I think Cano was that way. Cano just has a lot of energy, I think, because he's a guy who could go out late and still show up every day for work. And didn't matter if it was hot. You know this. Guy never missed a game. He didn't run out every ground ball every day. I mean, he didn't bust every ground ball, but he ran. He played hard as far as never missed an inning, no less a game. I can't even remember him coming out of the lineup in those games. He wanted every at bat, that guy. So, I mean, he likes to play, and he's a good lefty-righty, he's a heck of a hitter. He really is. I mean, that's a different-level hitter. You know, it really is. He makes a difference. So you think he can just change a whole lineup just by his presence?
Yeah, we do. We think, like you said, he can hit righties.
As can Cespedes if he ever plays. What about Cespedes? I mean, is Cespedes to a point where you just can't count on him anymore?
No, not at all.
I mean it's been a long time.
I understand. He wants to get back out there. I mean, I got to know him well the last couple of years that he's been with us. I mean, obviously, Brody knows him even better as representing him. He's a tremendous talent, and we just need to get him healthy and get him back on the field.
And you think that some point, your doctors tell you, some point in this year, you think you will see him?
That's what the hope is.
All right. As you know, when you go through this now, the big picture is the Met fan, I think, Jeff, feels they always feel, oh, the Mets, they're going to do just enough. They're going to be very careful. Give them the big picture of so that they understand as you go to these meetings here what is allowed, what isn't allowed as far as how you see this thing being built. What's extravagant, what's not extravagant?
Well, I think anything's allowed, and that's why we brought somebody out of the box thinking with Brody to be here to be aggressive and change the attitude of our fans and build some trust. And hopefully this is just starting. That they're going to follow along and watch what Brody has to do.
And as far as, I mean, is there a budget that is what we would call manageable, or is it pretty flexible as far as what's on the table?
I think it's flexible, and the way Brody did the first deal gave us even more flexibility. And we have some insurance money coming back that'll be redeployed, and there's ways to build the roster around it. We have some guys coming off this year now that are off. We got some guys coming off the next year or two. So there's flexibility how to structure getting the right number of bodies in to fill the positions. I mean, you said before, what we need, we'll be able to find a way to get that into the budget.
Brody, how do you view this as we head towards the winter meetings? What are you expecting? How do you expect this market to shake out? I mean, we saw what happened yesterday with Corbin. How do you think this is going to shake out this year?
I think it, at least from my standpoint, I feel like it's been about as active as any early market as I've seen. You know, for a free agent the size of Corbin to sign before the winter meetings, to have the trade that we just completed go down, for Segura to go to Philly, I mean, you're starting to see real activity, at least from the chatter that I've heard from clubs. it seems like there should be some fireworks here over the course of the next couple of
weeks. You think there's going to be a lot of trades? Do you think there's going to be a lot of activity? Forget the big couple guys that are at the top who will obviously, they're in a little bit of their own area there as far as that. You know, some clubs go after them, some don't. But as far as the rank and file, you think this is going to be a very aggressive year as far as signing free agents?
Free agents, I don't know. I think there's a lot of players out there. There's some depth for sure. I think we've got some starting pitchers that are still out there that fit in a few different price ranges. There's a lot of bullpen pieces, and if the bullpen market is anyway similar to what it was last year, there's going to be some spending there. But I do think we're going to see some big-name trades still to be had. It feels like there's a lot of players that may be available from teams that are either trying to reconfigure their payroll or clear it altogether.
Mickey, there's this change going on with starting pitching. We're seeing what Tampa did this year, okay? Is that going to be a new? Are we going to see more of that, or is that just going to be for teams that don't have starting pitchers that are going to be playing that game with these relievers starting games and the bullpen by and everything we're seeing now? Is that the new wave of where baseball is going to go, or is this just going to be for teams that just don't have starting pitchers?
It's going to be for teams, and this is my opinion.
Right.
This is for teams that
don't have the ability to sign get the guys.
It's for teams that don't rely on free agents to win.
Gotcha.
You know,
the Tampa's
how are you
going to
sign a free agent reliever and say, oh, we might start you? You know, right. that's tough to do. So I think Tampa had to do it to have the success they did this year, and it worked for them. I don't think it's something that all of baseball is going to grasp onto.
What will also work for them is they had a starter who pitched lights out and, you know, was like the best pitcher in the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the rest of their pitchers pitched great.
I mean,
they actually played unbelievably. You look at their everyday roster, it's hard to see how they ever, you know, won that many games. But they, and especially in a league where they're playing the Yankees and Red Sox 38 times, they won a lot of games. They really did. So people, I think, are trying to think, oh, Tampa was successful, so maybe we'll copy that. I don't think it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, though.
No, you can't. I think it's still baseball, and traditional baseball always rules. It's kind of like what you talked about with the two-hole, three-hole hitter.
Right.
The only reason you want to hit a Cespedes in the two-hole is to get him 17 more at-bats.
That's all, right.
So, you know, it's baseball is baseball, and we have baseball players that want to go out there
and pitch seven, 8 innings. Do you view starting pitchers any differently, though? Do you believe that you were going to ask less, or do you not go into the idea?
I'm on the opposite side.
So
of
am
that.
I. So I just wanted to, you want,
I want
you
them
to go pitch, right?
I want them to throw 9 innings.
Okay.
And I think I made that clear. That was our goal in Cleveland, and they almost did. That's our goal with DeGrom and Syndergaard, and those guys are pitching deep into the games consistently. I think we can prepare them to do that. I think we can raise them the right way in our minor league system and prepare them to continue to throw 6-7 innings a start and be the team that's ahead of everybody else because of that.
I didn't get to Matt's. Let me get to Matt's. Where is Matt's in this whole equation?
You know, I think Matt's a great starter. He's still coming into his own. I think he's kind of in between the stage Wheeler kind of got there this year. I think Matt's is one step behind him, but closing in fast. He's got a tremendous arm. I love the way he throws inside to righty, so he neutralizes that that component that usually hurts a left-handed starting pitcher. And he's going to continue to improve. Great worker, great guy, and Dave Island is going to get him where he needs to be.
How about you on Matt's?
I'm a big fan of Matt's. I think Mickey talked about the comparison with Wheeler. Matt's got to the 30-start mark this year. I think that was the first time he got anywhere close to it. And I think that there's an emotional hurdle that gives – once guys get past certain thresholds, they believe that they can go out and take the ball every time. And the fact that he pitched well on top of it, I think we're going to continue to see positive momentum with him.
How about the rest of your organization? What do you want, Brody, from your organization in terms of how you teach all your minor leaguers, how the scouting's done, the idea of philosophy all the way down into the guys you sign and international, every bit of the philosophy. What is going to be your philosophy as far as what the whole organization is going to produce?
Well, I've got to thank Jeff, not just because he's my boss, but the fact that he's here. We talked not just about major league payroll flexibility or budgets. We talked a lot about investments that I would have the ability to do in scouting, in player development, in analytics, so that we weren't only operating in one silo or in one vacuum. So, you know, the hires that we made with Allard Baird and with Adam Guttridge last week.
Allard
Baird
was a big sign. I mean, Riggleman and Allard Baird are showing you're going in the right direction. That's for sure.
We're getting pros. And I think Allard is such a good baseball
guy. I agree.
And what he does, to your exact point, is he's a development guy that can really systemize what we're doing at the minor league level from the draft all the way through. And even Mickey and Allard had a chance to get together today about making sure what we're doing at the big league level is consistent in the minor leagues.
Mickey, do you want him to teach them all a certain way? I mean, you want to work with your guys all the way down to your first, to your A-ball leagues and teach your guys? How do you want them, your players taught?
I think we need to develop them best we can. And to do that, we have to have a process. We have to have goals in A-ball. We have to have goals in AA. So each player moves up when they're supposed to. And if they can control the running game at this level, okay, then they can they go to the next level. So I think there has to be a process. I spent an hour with Allard this morning talking about all those things. What an unbelievable, thoughtful baseball guy. And he's all about development and developing baseball players the right way.
Jeff, what has been when you envisioned making this move, bringing in Brody, and obviously it's a outside-the-box move that has been well-received already. You're clearly more aggressive. Everyone likes, I mean, you mentioned Riggleman, excellent move. Baird, excellent move. What did you want to change right away inside, not just the Major League team, but in the whole organization?
I think positivity. I think we needed a little bit of some new blood and change the talk within the organization. I mean, Brody's a hard worker. I feel like I'm a hard worker. We're both in the office at before 8 o'clock in the morning talking baseball. And I go about my day. He goes about his day. And then we reconnect towards the end of the day, which is usually 7, 8 o'clock back at the office. I think he's done that. I think the great learning curve was going through this first deal, okay? And I didn't want the first deal to just be a run-of-the-mill deal. I wanted it to be something bigger because it's always going to be his first. But I think Brody could tell you, there were a lot of steps along the way that I knew about having done other deals with other GMs that he never did, and the ups and downs and deals almost falling apart. It's back together. It's falling apart. Seeing that through and having that with the rest of his staff to get through that first one is a huge learning curve, and I think is only going to serve us better in the future.
Brody, a big one for you. How did you find the organization? When you rolled up your sleeves and were there a couple of days, was it the organization in terms of culture, in terms of, as Jeff said, positivity? Was it the organization you thought it was, or was it different than you thought it was?
Well, I didn't know the depth of the organization. You know, I think in working with Jeff and working with Sandy and John Rico and Omar and some of the guys on the senior management level, Tommy Tanis, we worked with guys in certain capacities, but I had no idea what the capabilities were throughout the organization. And then my goal was really trying to take the 3 weeks before we really started cranking up on these deal-making modes, take 3 weeks to try to figure out what we have and take all of the good and then start to supplement it. And so that's why you're seeing the hires that are happening now, is that I wanted to make sure that we could assess where we needed support. And, you know, Allard was an example of leadership. We had a lot of good coaches in the minor leagues. We have got a lot of good player development personnel. But to be able to have somebody like Allard come in and provide leadership and structure to those guys, hopefully we can get to, you know, maximize that effort going forward.
Do you have a handle on the talent in the organization yet, or is that something that takes more time to learn?
Well, I think the organizations that have known their talent better than anybody else are the ones that have had the most success. You know, we've looked around the league.
How long would it take you to know the talent in your organization?
Well,
I mean, top to bottom.
I can't do it alone. And I think what we have now is Omar Minaya came in, Jeff, in April of last year.
Correct.
And he took that first season to really spend the time to get to know everybody, every player in the organization. Ian Levin has been with us a long time. He's known everybody. Tommy drafted most of the guys in this organization. So there are people here that know the players really well, and I've got to trust those guys before I have a chance to see them with my own eyes all the way through the system. I got to trust those guys and then also bring Adam Guttridge and TJ Barra into the equation to tell us what those guys project to based on the performance they've already had.
And how, Jeff, this is something that there seems to be a lot of, you know, difference of opinion on. How would you classify the talent in your organization top to bottom right now? Guys from the bottom of your minor leagues to emerging to the majors, not counting the major league team, how is the organization talent? As far as your prospects?
I would let somebody else ask that.
How would you say
I'll jump in. I think that a lot of people try to scoreboard watch in terms of how many prospects you have in the top 100. We're looking at how many players we got. And
So you think the guys who rate organizations are inaccurate how they do it?
No, I think sometimes it's a matter of how much of a signing bonus the guy got dictates where he gets on a prospect.
Okay.
Right? So,
which is true in every sport, where a guy's drafted.
Sure. Right, and look, I think when people make investments in those prospects, you want to make sure you get credit for them.
Right.
But I think as we looked at even this deal that we made, we felt like we were able to hang on to our top two prospects that are at the upper levels of the minor leagues in Alonso and Jimenez. We think those two guys were able to hold on to. We held on to two other double-A pitchers that are both first-rounders, like Dunn and David Peterson, Anthony Kay. And then we really feel like there's a really strong base of players' clients. They're all clients now, right, John?
Right.
Of players that are going to be on that Columbia team that we feel like we have a really good base.
The idea, you just mentioned clients. What was the biggest advantage you had in your old job taking this job? What advantage or vantage point did you have that someone else wouldn't have, considering your background?
Well, I think there's a couple things. Number one, it's understanding how to motivate players and understanding what players' needs are. You know, a lot of times players will communicate things to their parents and to their agents that they won't communicate to their coaches or their management. And to be able to have the dialogue where we can have transparency and honesty, I think there's value in that. And I don't think very many people in my chair have that type of dialogue or trust with the players. And so I want to build off of that and continue it.
Mickey, do you use your own eyes in spring training to evaluate what's below, or do you go spend time on the phone and trust your guys who are managing your clubs down there?
I do both. I think that I got to see, obviously, guys in spring training last year. I got to see Alonso have some at-bats. I got to see Jimenez come up and show the poise and his ability to put the bat on the ball. And I also get to talk to the player development guys. Yeah, I think that's crucial. That's one thing when I got the job that we thought was paramount, is for all of us to start, kind of co-mingling and making sure that we all are aware of what's going on with all of our players. Because like Brody said before, I've said it's about the players. And I think to answer your question about how our prospects are and what we have, they're about to get better.
Why?
With the hire of Allard Baird overseeing our minor league
system. They're going to be developed better, or they're going to be picked better?
They're going to be developed better. They're going to be picked better.
Okay.
And I think that's not a knock on what's been going on. It's just because we're going to continue to improve. So whatever we had last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever we have next year, it's going to be better the following year because we're going to do everything we can to be the best organization we can be.
Why do you think, Jeff, and I'll start with you on this, why do you think the Mets have been so good through the years, even dating back before you guys, at producing pitchers and not producing position players?
Great question. I'm not sure I know the answer. I've thought about it before. I think it's been a scouting and development thing.
You're looking for pitchers?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. That's the obvious answer. How would you answer that question, Brody?
Well, I don't have as much history clearly
right.
as Jeff does.
But it's clearly been an issue. There's no question.
But I think it's starting to change. I mean, from a development standpoint,
right.
Obviously scouting, happens not only at the domestic level, but happens in international as well. But when you look at our current roster, we've got two homegrown catchers. I mean, obviously Darno was a trade, but came up through our minor league system. We got our shortstop who's homegrown. We got our two corner outfielders that are homegrown. And Juan Lagares was an international sign. So we actually have a lot of guys that are contributing right now. And I think, as Mickey said, the goal for us in the development system now is to create consistent messaging. Omar and I were able to spend some time with some of our top prospects this fall, sat down with them, and one thing that we heard consistently was, we just want to have the same message from the rovers that come in to see us, to the coaches that we have, to what they're expecting for us from the big leagues. And that's what we're trying to do for the hitters especially.
Does the same old Mets stuff bother you that you hear everywhere? I mean, you're trying to change that now. You're out in front of that. Jeff brought you in because you're a positive guy who's got, obviously, a polished guy who's positive and is going to try and change that. And you already have dug in on that, clearly. But that's what you always hear. That's kind of like follows around certain franchises. It has followed the Mets around.
Yeah, I mean, again, everybody has their own perspective. I did a lot of deals with Jeff. I did a lot of deals with Sandy. And I remember during the Cespedes negotiation, it was the first one. And I asked Sandy a question as we were going down the road. I said, okay, I know the reputation for the Mets. Are you in this to win it? And that was a question both in terms of in it to win games, but also in to win the negotiation to try to get the player. And so that was a mindset that I saw and felt immediately that I don't know the rest of the world felt. And so when I took this job, it's been a continuation of that. Jeff talks about, wanting to go get the best team and get the best players. I feel like, we have the ability to go out and finish first, not finish second or third or fourth. And that's what we believe we can do.
And I give Sandy credit on Cespedes because he didn't want him. And we all know that, and I know the background. And you guys convinced him to take him. And it wasn't easy because he didn't really want him. And he finally backed off and said, I'll take him, which, you know, that showed me something, though, that he did that.
Well, I think he deserves more credit than that. That might have been his negotiating style, because he wouldn't have put forth a deal that he negotiated with Brody, and I got involved at the end.
I'm talking about when you traded for him. You know,
No. He was there. With the trade, there were others in the room that didn't want him.
Right.
And I remember him giving me the thumbs up that he wants me to go forward and actually pull the trigger. And I'll never forget him walking out of the room. One last time, he said, thumbs up. I gave him thumbs up. But there were naysayers in that room for sure on the trade side.
On the trade side, yes. And after that, he had obviously a great start. Yeah. But that whole idea of changing that is a big deal. And with you, Mickey, like I said, you got beat up. I mean, it's an easy thing, but the scorecard thing had to drive you crazy. I mean, you heard about it all year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you wanted to deck somebody for bringing up the scorecard thing one more time.
I mean, Mike, sitting in that dugout in Cincinnati when we batted out of order and it's a day game and the sun's beating down.
I remember.
And we just got Mesoraco. It was the worst day of my life. Every single day that lineup card went up there, or a manager on the opposing team is standing on the top step the rest of the year,
yep.
I panicked a little bit because it was something that I should have taken care of. It was on my watch, and I felt like I let the team
And you
down.
Hear those fans it in the tough. Stands the whole year. They don't stop. I mean,
no, they don't.
They go
you know
after
what?
You the whole year.
You know what? They deserve to, because it's something
can't
that shouldn't
happen. Can't have rabbit ears, obviously. So
yeah, yeah.
You can't.
You have to move on.
But still, you know what? You went through a whole year of it, though. It's tough. It's tough. You heard about it. It followed you the whole season.
Yeah.
Mike, he made one mistake. And he made other mistakes also. Yeah. But what we talked about with Mickey when he first came on is, okay, you're going to make mistakes. You're a rookie in this position. Don't make it a second time. And I think that's what he proved. And I think he and the staff deserve great credit for not having this team laid down on them.
No, he's not laid down. Absolutely. The team played hard down the stretch. It absolutely did. But just the idea of dealing with that. And what was the hardest part of being a first-year manager? What's the thing that you have to learn? You were a successful pitching coach. You're on a championship team. You know, you're in the World Series, the whole thing. What was the hardest part of being a first-year manager in a new league?
Yeah, I think that obviously the league is totally different. When you come over to the National League, you're thinking 1,000 thoughts
yep.
in a game, where in the American League, you're thinking about five. You know, who are you going to yep. bring in to face the next, this batter when the starter comes out? So there was definitely that component. The other component was, the media responsibilities and kind of managing your time throughout the day so the players get enough attention, because they deserve the attention. That my job is to also take care of the media responsibilities and do all that, and I have to balance those things. So, I was constantly learning how to balance those things, and I think towards the end, it all came together, and I really got used to it and got the flow of it and was able to feel like I was doing the players justice by spending the right amount of time with them. And there was times in the middle of the season where I didn't do a great job of that, and I learned from it. I got some feedback from the guys, and we made the adjustment. And I felt like at the end we were clicking pretty well.
Yeah, and you obviously had the thing where you didn't have Cespedes for such a big part of the season last year. He was in, out. You didn't know where he was, whether he was going to play, this and that. He was almost like hanging over the club's head the whole year, which is tough when that's your big player.
It is. You want to have him in the lineup. He's such a difference maker.
Look at the record. The record with him playing is unbelievable.
it's unbelievable.
To the way he doesn't play.
And just being an opposing pitching coach and an opposing pitching staff when he's in a lineup, and preparing for that and the anxiety that causes, that's a tremendous boost going into a series, even if he doesn't do anything.
How about handling players now? Do you think it, I go through this all the time, and having done this for as long as I have, 30-something years, clearly coaches and managers are different now, and players get a lot more leeway on a lot of things than they used to, and the way practice schedule is done, and in every sport, everything has changed. Do you think you have to have a different temperament with players now than you did years ago?
I think you definitely do. I think that
is it explaining things to them, or is it just that you have to be maybe less rigid?
Players are very thoughtful, and they can go search things. They have immediate information at their disposal, and it's not just coming from the coaches. When I played, the only information I had was from a coach. So I just did whatever he told me to do. So when you're a coach nowadays, you have to be prepared going in that they're going to ask intelligent questions. They're going to be able to research things, and you have to be prepared to know everything that's out there to get them to go in the right direction. And it's not being less rigid. It's creating a culture where this game has to be played the right way. It just does for us to be successful. It's making sure that your culture creates an atmosphere that everyone in that clubhouse expects the game to be played the right way, and they hold themselves accountable for it.
Do you expect different things, Jeff, as an owner from your players now than you did 10 years ago? Do you treat them differently?
I don't know if you expect anything different. I think you do treat them a little bit differently. I mean, they deserve respect. I think they care about their families. They care about what they're doing. You have to show that you care about them as a person.
Do you have more interaction with players now or less than you did, say, 10 years ago?
I'd say about the same.
About the same, okay. How about you as a general manager? Do you believe in having a lot of interaction with your players or not a lot of interaction with your players?
You know, we talked about it earlier. I think that's going to be a strength of mine, and I think it's going to be a competitive advantage. And you know,
is that his domain or is that your domain as a general manager?
That's a great question. I think we've talked a lot about this. Is if we're going to create the culture and the team framework that we want, is that we're all in the same domain. You know, Robbie Cano was in my office today talking about roster construction. I want to be in his office. But the bottom line is, you know, these players have a really tough job. They don't have a shade tree. One of my partners used to call, if you go out there for God and country to watch you perform every day, they see whether you succeed or fail.
Yeah,
so they're held accountable. Mickey's held accountable
absolutely.
When he says the lineup card. And I want us to be held accountable. And I think if the players realize that we're going to work as hard as they are and we're willing to put our success in their hands and they're willing to put their success in our hands, then we can live and die together.
Well, you know, that's the one thing of the jobs we take that are public, like yours and mine, we get report cards. That's the way everyone knows what our performance is. I mean, it's there. It's obvious. So, I mean, that's part of the job they take. But that's a fine line, isn't it? You know, it's interesting. I know that general managers, I won't give you any team, that has showed up on the road because his team's floundering and thinks he's got to go address his team. Is that something you could see yourself doing?
There won't be a change whether we're playing well or playing poorly for me. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be omnipresent. I've talked to Jeff and Fred and Saul that it's important for players
you
to see
you. You want to be on the road with your team, you think, a lot?
Absolutely.
All year?
As much as possible.
Okay, that's unusual. So not every general manager does that. So you want to be with the team even on the road?
If my wife lets me.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, you know she's the boss like everyone else, so we're all the same. But, I mean, that's interesting. So you want to be a very visible part of this organization. How do you feel about that, Mickey? You okay with
that? I like it. I think that Jim Riggleman, in his interview, said something very interesting. I mean, I learned a ton from him just in his interview. He said even when his team's lost, he made it a point to walk through the clubhouse and pat a guy on the back. You know, most managers just go duck in and they're done. They're mad they lost. I think Brody's consistency in that is going to go a long way. And it would be different, like you said, if he just came in when we're losing just to be seen. But Brody's not that type of guy. He's going to be present. He's going to come in when times are good and bad, and he's going to believe in everything that's going on down there. And it's about communication. All of us need to be as present as we possibly can, but we have to communicate. And if he has a conversation with a player, he's going to let me know about it, just like I'm going to let him know what's going on with every player. And as long as that's done, then it's better that we're all present and the players know that we all care for them.
Are you a guy that chew out? Like if your team went out, you had some stinker games last year.
Yeah.
All right, we know that. I mean, I saw a bunch of those. So did you chew your team out? Are you a guy that chew your team out?
You know what?
Or you don't believe in that?
No, I believe in that.
Okay.
I think it worked for me.
Okay.
I think it works for certain people. I think you have to pump them up every now and again.
Okay.
And I know there's, I'm a fiery guy. I know it doesn't always come across that way. But I played with fire, and I got charged on the mound, and I hit people on purpose because I thought it was necessary. And I'll do anything I can to win. And if I need to chew somebody out, I'll do it. And I've done it many times. If I think I need to keep my composure, I'll do that as well. So I'm there to win no matter what it takes. I'll embarrass myself to win. I'll do anything it takes for us to win a ball game.
So you guys you want to build a partnership with your management team is what you're saying, right?
That's the exact word. And we have to – people inherently know the truth. So why not tell them the truth?
Yeah.
And once you do, you're going to gain respect from them. And as long as we're all on the same page and we're rolling up our sleeves together, I think it's a partnership. And I told the players, I said, look, I'm excited to work for you. Most people think they work for us. It's the other way around. We work for these guys. If we give them the support and the resources, we're gonna win.
Now, you came on. You were the first day. You were pretty cocky. You said I'm gonna win. And you know what? I gave you grief, but I said I like it. I like people who are cocky, but they got to back it up. Now that meant I said we'll see. Let's see the deals. Now we've seen one. Let's see where you're headed. But you said we're gonna win now and in the future. And you underlined now. You made sure you underlined now. Okay, so and your fan base got pretty charged up by that. I could see that, you know, some of the guys think, man, this guy's on the moon. Where are we going to get these players from? We were a terrible team last year. And the bottom line is you have been very aggressive so far. So you think you can win with this team, maybe not as constructed today, but in a couple of weeks this year.
We have to keep going. And we're not there yet.
You didn't answer the question.
Your question is spot on. We have to do more. We're going to win this year.
Win this year. Define winning.
Well, we won, what, 77 games last year?
77, yes.
We've got to win a lot more games this year. But
how many is that?
We're not going to go off what our analytics say.
I don't care about number. Playoffs.
Look,
playoffs is fine. I don't need 92.
Ever, I mean, for us, we're not trying to build models to get into a wild card game and take our chances. We're here to win divisions. We're here to win championships. And I think if we put the right guys in the room, cocky, confident, whatever you want to call it, we're not stopping here. We're going to keep trying.
Is it fair to say you're confident?
I'm very confident, yes, and I'm even harder working.
Okay, that's good. I mean, but you feel you have what I've always said is when I'm asked all the time, obviously, by people, what do you want to see in an executive? What do you want to see in a manager? I always say the same thing. I want a guy who's got a plan, and you can't move him off his plan. Now, after a certain period of time, if it's not working, we're all going to know it. But I don't want to see a guy who's like one day this way, next day this way. I want a guy to have a plan and a vision. Clearly, you have come in with that right now. So do you feel, is it fair to say you feel you have a recipe that's going to work?
We're on our way to our plan. And any good plan has to have a plan B and it has to have a plan C because we can't control all the variables.
Right.
So we're going to always try to have
You have something in mind for this team. You have a vision right now where you would like to be when you go down at Port St. Lucie, which has now grown up. I mean, the first time I went to Port St. Lucie, I used to stay down in Palm Beach because there was not even a place to stay in when we first went there, right? There was Chi-Chi's. There was nothing in the town. Dog and I used to have to drive back to PJ National and sleep there every night, 50 minutes. Now it's grown up into a pretty big city. It really has. So when you go to Port St. Lucie, which I will visit because I have a place in Palm Beach, but you think you will have... You hope to have, or I would say you think you'll have, your team, and you will go have put your pieces together.
Yes, and I think our moves yesterday gave us two pieces that are going to help us do that, and we're going to keep going. And some of those moves, they may not all make headlines like they did yesterday.
They don't have to make headlines.
But we're going to be smart. We've already added some guys to minor league contracts. We're going to continue to be aggressive there to give us the depth. But we're going to add major league pieces that people are going to recognize, but we're also going to do smart moves that get us better.
That's Brody. Of course, I want you guys to get the voices down. So, you know, that's Brody Van Wagenen, of course, with Mickey Callaway and Jeff Wilpon. Brody, you know, you said that you win right away. You say that you have a plan right now. When you got this first piece in, did you go out of your way? Jeff alluded to it, so I think you did. You wanted this first one to make a splash for effect? Were you trying to send a message to your fan base by making sure the first one was a big one for effect?
It was for you.
Oh, for me.
We knew this was already on calendar that we had to come in here. So okay, we didn't want to have nothing to talk about. Yeah, I had more than words.
That was a good idea not to come in here empty handed. I mean, I can tell you that. That was a very good idea. But was it fair to say you wanted that first one to make a splash?
We wanted it to matter. And not just because we wanted people to be talking about it, but we wanted it to address the needs that we have. And I think we did that.
So. All right. Let me get to one other point. I like Tim Tebow as a football player. What is this fascination, and he's your client, what is this fascination with Tim Tebow as a baseball player? What is it? What are you going to dress Mr. Met in center field and put Tebow in left? I mean, Tebow's not a major league player. What are you guys talking about?
Have you seen him play?
We need him at Syracuse.
Yeah.
Okay?
We just draw people?
We listen, he's a great person.
The guy hit 230 in Double A.
He's a great person.
A great person. Hey, he should be a senator in Florida someday, or a governor, or a president. Tim Tebow's a great, hey, nicest guy. Great. I actually believe all his religion. I think he believes everything. I don't think he's got a fake bone in his body. He was a great football player. He's not a good baseball player. He's Tim Tebow, the celebrity. That's what he is. What is he doing? He's not going to be on a major league roster, is he?
I have always said about Tim, tell him he can't do something, and he's going to prove you wrong.
Well, when does he start exactly? Have you seen something that shows you a pathway to the major leagues for this guy?
No question. I think the strides he made from when he first signed and the showcase that he had to how much better he's gotten at the level of competition he's had to perform, it's been remarkable. Now, can he take those same strides and climb as fast as he has last year?
Where are you starting him this year?
Syracuse.
You're starting with Syracuse. Okay. And
one step away.
Is the idea, though, but if he is it because he's Tim Tebow, your agent, or Tim Tebow, the celebrity? Is that a part of this?
As a man, and I know him extremely well, and I believe in him, you know, in similar ways to the way you're describing him, he would never want a charity invite to a major league roster.
Even Sandy admitted it was a marketing. He even admitted that I can put this in the marketing department as much as the personnel department.
Well,
I think,
again, it goes back to partnership. I don't think the right arm has to be mutually exclusive from the left arm. But
this is what I'm saying to you is, for you, this is not a publicity stunt, Tim Tebow.
No. And I believe that if Tim is good enough to help us out at the major league level, he'll play there. But at the same point is, he's not going to want a courtesy shot at the big leagues. He's going to have to earn
it. And you're not bringing him here to sell tickets, okay? No. Although he'll sell tickets everywhere he goes. I understand that he's got a huge following. The guy could draw people anywhere. He's like Kylie Jenner. He can draw people in a department store. Okay? he's one of those people who's just, he has a following. He has an incredible following.
Mike, do you think he'd like that?
Someday he'll have a podcast.
Do you think he'd like that analogy, him and Kylie Jenner?
Why not? I mean, she fills up. Hey, I bought Ulta stock because she fills up everywhere she goes. I mean, she sells makeup. She breaks the computers selling that stuff. She doesn't have a talent in her body, but people flock to her. Same thing with Tebow. Tebow shows up at the Super Bowl. There is like 1,000 people there to watch him everywhere he goes. You've dealt with this. You know it's true.
No, he is a needle mover. The only good part is Jeff keeps telling me if we win more games, we sell more tickets. So if we win enough games, then the ballpark's going to be sold out. Hey, so off we go.
Only thing that really sells here in this town is winning. That's all. In the long run, you can have a day. You can bring a guy up. Okay. But in this town, people go. The only two teams in this town that draw fully when they don't win are the New York Giants and the New York Rangers. Not even the Yankees. Their attendance will take a big dip. Giants, they show up. They might yell and scream and burn their tickets, but they'll show up. And Rangers always show up. They're the only teams that show up when they lose. Otherwise, the rest of the teams, you got to win. I don't care who it is. The Knicks, they're showing up. It's a lot of people who are tourists showing up to see the team. But they want to see Madison Square Garden. They want to see the show, the whole thing. But you got to sell. You know that. In this town, you win, the people will be there. And you win big, they'll be there big. You won't have you'll have every seat full. You know that. That's how this town is. You have 9 professional teams. You know, there's always go on. This town goes on to the next season. It goes on to the next team when you're out of it. That's just the way this town works. I mean, it's always that way in every sport. So, yes, it's about winning.
Yeah, that's the goal.
That's it. So, but Tim Tebow, to be fair, is not either someone you love as having been his agent or a publicity stunt.
Neither. Well, I do love him having been his agent.
Right.
There clearly is some marketing value if he's successful.
Right.
But there's negative backlash if he's not.
What do you think Tim Tebow wants to do with his life, since you know him so well?
He wants to continue to make an influence on people and community and kids more than anything
else.
And
why did he go to baseball? What was the point?
He had a burning desire to play the sport that he gave up in high school, and he felt like he loved baseball more than anything in the world, except playing quarterback. Right, and that's why a lot of people wanted him to go play a different position in the NFL. Go be a tight end. Go be a linebacker. Mm-hmm. He said, unless I can lead men from the quarterback position, I'd rather go play baseball. And he's doing it.
Which he could. He just wasn't very good throwing the ball. But, I mean, he's a leader. Tim Tebow is, I think, a special human. I mean, if you told me in 25 years, you told me Tim Tebow was president, I would say, okay. I mean, I think he's that kind of guy. I could see that. But if you tell me he's in right field, I'm going to be, give me a break. I mean, come on.
Well, he did have to get pushed a little bit, Mike, because of his age. Right. And I think that's what Sandy tried to do last year, is push him a little bit.
Right.
But again, let me ask
this question, because he is another one that he'll be a fa- – now there'll be stories about him in the paper tomorrow because I brought this up. What would he have to do to be in the major leagues? Not in September call-up, but, I mean, actually be on the roster.
Look, I think he's going to have to fill in where we need him. You know, if we somehow suffered an injury and we needed somebody to replace Brandon Nimmo or Michael Conforto in the starting lineup, and Jeff McNeil was still playing a different position on our roster right now, we'd have to go look to the minor leagues and say, okay, who's the best guy in the minor leagues right now? And if Tim Tebow's the best offensive player in AAA at that point in time, he's going to be in Mickey's lineup.
Oh, my God. I gotta see that day. I mean, really,
you gotta come to this golf tournament this year with us, Mike.
Well,
I was there last year with Brody. 6,000 people coming just to watch him.
Hey,
walk around.
I've seen it. Like
crazy.
I said, there's like certain people that you tell them there's gonna be somebody there. There's this kid now that the kids all who's this guy on YouTube who's like. He's a kid who wears all this makeup and everything. He draws like millions of people. He went to Long Island this week. I can't remember the guy's name. They had to stop the traffic in the streets for the kid. And he's got a YouTube thing. He's got like 5 million people on it. I can't remember his name. I'm going to think of it after you go. You can look him up. I have to ask my daughter who it, the guy on YouTube, he's always wearing all the crazy makeup and everything. He's got a makeup show. I have to ask my daughter. She knows. But the guy went to Roosevelt Field and stopped. He had stopped the whole town. They had to get. They had to reroute the traffic. I mean, the guy's crazy. So there's people like that. I agree. There'll be people who show up for him. The other thing I was wondering is, have you told Cespedes that McNeil's a scratch golfer, so he actually has someone to play golf with all the time now?
I haven't played with him yet, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true? He's a scratch golfer?
Yeah, he's really good.
Wow. Yeah, well, listen, he played against Spieth in the amateurs. And he told me he scratched. I said, you have to go play against your owner. He says, is he good? I said, he's not good. He's the best amateur player I ever played with. He is scared. I mean, he's so good, it's scary.
Well, I'd like to see that match.
So McNeil says he scratched, Jeff. You got to play him. Says he plays 4 times a week in the offseason.
All right.
And I said,
take him to your home
course. Wait until Cespedes finds out.
Well, Cespedes doesn't play handicaps. He takes my money and won't give me strokes. I've played with him too much, and he's taken my money.
Yeah.
How good is he?
He's very good.
Not as good as you.
No, but no. He's got the ability.
Jeff is crazy.
Thank you.
Jeff is, I mean, guys say they scratch and they're lying. He says he's scratching. He's serious. I mean, the day I played with him, he shot 67, I think. So, I mean, he is a scary golfer. So McNeil said to me, I had him on the other day, and I said, I know you're a golfer. He says, yes. I said, are you good? He goes, yes. And then he said, how good? He goes, scratch. I said, oh, okay. I said, how many times a week you play? He said, 4 in Santa Barbara. And he played against Spieth in the amateurs. He said he lost. He admitted he didn't make the cut. Spieth did. He didn't make the cut in the amateur championship. So Spieth wound up winning it. I don't know what year it was, but he wound up winning it. But how about McNeil for a second? 329 last year. What's the ceiling on him? Is he an everyday player for you, Mickey?
Yeah, I think he can handle the bat as an everyday guy.
No
I
question. Think he played, Does he have a position for an everyday player?
I think he played
player?
Defense at second base like an everyday guy last year. And I think it just depends on the makeup of your team. I think right now as we sit today, we could plug him in at many places and be an everyday guy, or we can move him around and get him almost just as many at bats.
He says he plays third as well as second. He told me. And he also said, you know, I said, I heard you were more good hit, no field. He says, that's not fair. I'm a good fielder. I just got moved around as a guy who they put me behind every guy, so I never had an everyday position. I'm a good fielder. So he said he was a pretty good fielder. Did you see that in him?
I saw a great second baseman with great instincts, great jumps on the balls, and he worked at it. He worked with Gary DeSarcina every day to turn two better, to get his footwork better, positioning. And he's a thoughtful player with great instincts, so he can play anywhere in the field.
Brody, last year Seattle was down on Robbie a little bit defensively, especially when Gordon got there, and there was talk of him going to first base. Do you see him? A, do you think he slipped from anything you learned in scouting him? Had he slipped last year at second base? And do you see him eventually? Like A-Rod said to me, he has one of the great infield arms of all time. He would be a great third baseman, A-Rod said. Cano. He thought Cano would be a great third baseman. Do you see Cano at a corner eventually moving out of the middle infield, or do you project him to be your second baseman and stay there for years? Or do you think he could move to a corner?
Time will tell on the latter, but yes, we project him to be our second baseman for the next few years, okay. Next couple of years. And on his defense, the last 2 years defensively were actually better than the two years previous.
So
to
then
that.
He didn't slip. Okay, so,
so,
that
so he
was
actually
not true.
Got better, and he worked on his lateral mobility and
right.
And Jeff saw him, Mickey
well,
saw him.
Well, we know it's not his arm. His arm is unbelievable. He's got a great infield arm, one of the best ever. But a lot of people felt his range had slipped. Now, I didn't see him a lot in Seattle, so I don't know if he did or
it
didn't.
It was better the last 2 years, and he's got himself in really good shape. And these guys saw it, is that, you know, Robbie is – he's athletic, and he can
– So you don't project him to a corner at all?
Not in the near term.
Okay. And McNeil, would he more likely Mickey be third? Is that be the more likely, or would you like him to – could he play first too?
He can play first. He can play the outfield. He can play multiple positions. I think that I had a talk with his double-A manager, saw him play short. At times, and he can stand there if we need him to. So there's value in being able to move around. There's value in being able to start for a month in one position or the other, and he can do all those things. So he's a very valuable player.
He also thought in the interview I did, guys, that the first baseman is the real deal. Now, you didn't bring him up last year, which, you know, everyone wanted to see him. You didn't bring him up. What's your plan for him? How does he project for you this year?
We're hoping he's a big part of our team, and we hope he can be opening day.
Opening, I mean,
we're making
he
roster.
He could be your everyday first baseman on opening day.
That certainly is the goal. And we're building our roster. We're putting a lot of stock in having him be an impact.
He was in the
fall,
Arizona Fall League, right?
He was in a Fall
did
League.
He play
guy.
Well?
I went. He did well. He led the league in home runs out there. I went and saw him. This kid has power, but he's got work ethic and makeup.
How bad is his defense?
I think it's been much, much better.
Okay. Is it a footwork deal with his face?
Footwork,
first
but I think Tim Tuffle, our minor league infield instructor, right. has a really good relationship with Peter, and they've been working a lot together, and he's made big strides.
And people who don't know baseball don't understand. First base is a hard position to play, not an easy position. I mean, very hard. You're in on every play, and footwork is a very big key. So it's not an easy position to play. People are nuts about that. Left field, you can stick a guy. First base, you get killed if you stick a guy. But you guys think he can be a workable first base. Right, and the power is real, right?
The power is there. He made some great adjustments too in his strike zone.
Is he a 200 strikeout guy? Well, no.
I think he's going to develop into someone that's not.
Okay.
You know, you can't ever predict these things, but the strides he made last year towards the end of the season were amazing, and it even took another step in the fall league against a little bit better pitching than he had seen during the season. So. He's in line to come in and compete for a job and hit a lot of homers for us in spring training. And like Brody said, we want him to be an impactful player for us next year.
All right, who's tight on time? Anybody? You guys got time?
We're
good. Okay, now listen. It's for Christmas. What I want to do is, in a couple of minutes, I want to have a couple of callers call in and ask each a question. How's that? Okay, or two. Okay, so I'll referee. If any of them get tough, I'll get rid of them. Don't worry about it. But we'll do that in a minute. Mons, get them up. So, and just designate who they want to say hello to and ask a question. We'll do that. But, Jeff... Big picture, before I let the callers in, what are you expecting out of this year? You made the bold move. You brought him in, okay? A lot of guys that shook up baseball, which I liked. I mean, you know, you thought outside the box. It's an interesting move, a fascinating move. What are you expecting from this team this year?
Progress. Real progress.
Define that for me.
I think getting ourselves in a position to be in the playoffs.
Okay. Okay. Playoffs is a fair word? Playoffs?
Playoffs, because I think it's a crapshoot. Once you're in the playoffs, I'll take my chance.
Right, but can be a playoff team this year, which I categorize as a 90-win team. You think it can be that team?
I think if some of the deals Brody's been talking about actually come to fruition and he gets there, we'll be in that position. And I think what I talked about with Brody in the interview process and some of the other candidates as well is how do we have a 10-year run of success, which to me success is We're fighting for a playoff position every year. I'll take my chances. You get me in the playoffs a number of times, we're going to win our share.
You can talk playoffs. Can you mention a player on another team right now? You can't, right? You're not allowed to mention a player on another team, right, who's on another roster, or you're allowed to this time of year? Are you allowed to?
I can't talk to the other player on the
roster. No, but I mean, you can talk about him, though, right now?
No, I got to be careful there.
You're not, so I can't say what about the real Muto and whether you're getting him or not. I can't ask that.
I can say he's a really good player.
That's it?
That's about it.
You can't say he's the object of your affection. That's not.
Can't go there.
Okay. And he's a really good player.
Hit the dump button if
he
does.
As a matter of fact, you and I had breakfast last March and we talked about two guys, getting two guys, Real Muto and Yelich. Those were the two guys that we talked about. You know, and Yelich had some season last year until the playoffs. Then he just bombed. But that's all right. That happens all the time. We all know that happens to a lot of guys. How about that? This is a. I have this conversation, Brody, before I take the calls all the time with Cashman. The idea of building a team for the regular season and building a team for the playoffs. Do you draw a distinction, or are you one of those guys who says, I win my 100 games, my 95 games, and the playoffs are going to be a crapshoot? Or do you think you can design a team to be a little better than that in the postseason?
Well, I think our starting pitching as it's designed now gives us a chance to do both, because we got guys that can go to post over the course of a 162-game season, and lining up our aces, we're going to be able to go head-to-head and beat anybody in the playoffs. So our job is to get us there.
Mickey, what can you, as a pitching guru, what can you give me that sheds light on why one guy goes in the playoffs and is lights out, and another guy goes in the playoffs with glistening Kershaw, the Kershaw effect versus the Eovaldi effect or the Verlander effect? Why does one ace shine in the postseason and another with insane stuff not shine year after year in the postseason?
There's so many factors that can play into that. The one, and what I can speak to is the one thing that I talked to our pitchers in Cleveland when we were in the playoffs was, let's deal with controversy better than everybody else. That's all we wanted to do. If there's a bad call, let's deal with it better than the other team. If there's a error, let's deal with that better than the other team and focus on the next pitch. I think it's guys that can knock out all the noise, knock out all the distractions, and focus on the next pitch that are really going to pitch the best in the playoffs. And I think that the guys in Cleveland did a great job of that for a couple of years.
You know, it's a funny thing, though. I mean, Eovaldi this year, part of the resume that you're hearing, and clearly he's got great stuff and he's injury prone, but he was lights out in the postseason, which is going to up his ante to people, while a guy like Kluber struggled. A guy like Kershaw continues with – you see Kershaw in August, September, he doesn't give up a run for 2 months. And then he goes in and he cannot get through those innings, and you say – is it something that happens? And, you know, we've seen guys, you know, El Duque was a guy that you could leave him on the beach for 11 weeks in the summertime, and then if you pitched him in October, he was going to pitch a gem. I mean, it was the way he was built. You know, do you see that as something you can actually measure, or is that just luck of the draw?
Well, the beauty for us is we watched Syndergaard and DeGrom in 2015 and 2016. I mean, I don't know that there was a better pitcher in a long time in the postseason. Verlander probably could rival it, but the way Jacob DeGrom was in 2015,
he was very good.
He was dominant.
Yes.
Even when he didn't have his best stuff against the Dodgers out in L.A., he still competed and gave the team a chance to win the game, which they ultimately did. So I think we have some proven, tested guys there, but we talk about makeup and character development all the time. If you got guys that thrive in those moments and actually embrace it, they're not afraid of it, then, you know, I think we're going to have a chance. And we already have a couple of those guys on the roster.
Do you think the strikeouts gotten crazy? Do you want to have a team that has hitters that make more contact? Forget the field as far as the shift as much, but this year there were more strikeouts than hits for the first time in baseball history. And there's not a lot of hits a lot of times. And these extra inning games, you watch them and you think, my God, every guy's trying to hit every ball out of the ballpark. You don't even see a bunt. You don't see it. What about that, Mickey? You want to have guys that are better at moving guys along? The Red Sox were good at that. You know, they'd beat out a two-out hit and beat out a two-out double play ball and then get three singles. Or they'd dump a single in there. They didn't have to hit a bomb every time. They didn't have guys striking out every time. Do you want to have that kind of guy versus a bunch of guys who hit home runs?
I think you need a mixture. I think you have to have the McNeils of the world. I think you have to have the Jay Bruces of the world that kind of make your team whole. You know, as a manager, I'd like to see three guys that scrap and put the ball in play and get on base. I'd like to see three guys that are hitting homers, and I'd like to see three guys that never give up an at-bat and always grind it out and make the pitcher work. And if you can have some kind of, you know, just mix of those hitters, I think that's the ideal scenario. Being an ex-pitching guy, making a game plan for a bunch of hitters that want to go up there and hit home runs, I loved it. Because you knew you were going to get a lot of strikeouts and you're going to prevent some runs if you didn't make many mistakes. I want to be able to beat a pitcher when he's on top of his game by moving the runner over, by bunting him over, if we have to. And if you have a mixture of all those guys, that you got three guys that can hit the ball out of the park, you got three guys that can get on base, then you can beat a pitcher when he's on his game, and you can beat pitchers when they're not on their game. And I think that's key, especially for the playoffs.
They're going to give you these so you can listen to the calls, guys. I'm going to plug in the headset. I'm talking, of course, with Jeff Wilpon and Brody Van Wagenen and Mickey Callaway. I'll ask you first, Brody, what's the biggest thing you have to change? Perception of the Mets, you talked about it, the perception you had as an agent of the Mets. Were the Mets serious? Were they for real? Did they really want to get involved? What's the biggest thing you think you have to change as now the face of the franchise, or one of the faces of the franchise, about people's perception of the Mets?
Optimism versus skepticism. I want Mets fans, and I want people even around the game, is to look at us to say, okay, we wake up every morning with hope and belief as opposed to doubt.
All right, how about you, Mickey? What's the thing you want to change, if anything, about the perception of the Mets?
Yeah, I'm right with Brody. I think that there's a lot of things to feel good about. I think that this is a thoughtful organization that's going to continue to try and improve every day. And I want the fans to understand that we're doing everything we can to be the best organization.
Jeff, how about you? As the guy who is the boss of the franchise, as the owner of the franchise, what if anything, do you want to – I mean, you've already tried to obviously step in that direction with the hires, but what do you want to change, if anything?
I think I want everybody to understand that we want to win and we care about winning, okay? And we live and die the season as the fans do. And from top to bottom, my dad on down, we all want to win. And we really care about the players. We care about what we're doing out there on the field. And I know it's a bad perception right now, but I think we want to get to a point where everybody knows we want to win.
Mons, give me one call for each guy, and then I'll let them go to their say hello to this, wherever they're going. They got to go do a couple of things, I know, inside the radio station, so I'll let them do that. But first, let me get in. Give me one guy for Steve. Who does he want to talk to first? Tell me which one. Who wants to? Okay, Steve, you get to direct it to one person. Who you want to direct your question to?
Mr. Brody, please.
Okay, go ahead.
Great pleasure to talk to you guys. Very excited for the future here. And I was just curious, when it comes to players in Noah Syndergaard's position, and there's been a lot of talk about him being traded, I know the standard answer is as sort of part of the business, but I wonder on a more personal level, just how do you deal with you know, communicating with him, telling him what's going on, and just sort of, you know, if he does or does not get traded, let's say he does not, just how you go about, you know, making him feel, you know, safe and secure moving forward so that he can perform.
All right, Brody, how about the idea of a player who a lot of times, and you know this as being an agent, guys who got to deal with the fact that their name is bandied about as far as maybe being trade bait?
Well, I think this year was a perfect example of that, because some players over the course of the last week, we did trade. And I was communicating to them and to their agents in advance of that so that they were aware of it. Jay Bruce is one of those guys. Justin Dunn was another one of those guys. And Jeff McNeil, on the flip side, was hearing his name out there a lot. And we told him and his agent that he was not going to be moved. In Noah's case, I've repeatedly talked to him, most recently on Monday night, to make sure he understood that the moves we were making now are made with him as part of our design for success. And so I want him to know when rumors are real, when rumors are false, and be able to instill confidence that if something is ever going to happen with a player, I want them to hear about it from me first.
Mickey, how about you on that one? Do you also, when you know that all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of speculation about a player, feel you got to pick up the phone and call him?
You definitely have to connect with these guys. You know, I talked to Jay Bruce as well, and it just so happened that Brody had talked to him first, and Jay Bruce told me, he said, Brody told me everything. He was totally upfront with me. I've never seen that in a GM. Jay Bruce has been traded three times now, and he's never had that, and he valued that. And this was when Jay Bruce was still going to be on our team, and he valued that as a player from his GM. So, yeah, we definitely reach out to him. You know, being a manager, you know, I want to be for the players. I want them to all stay, and that's my responsibility to let them know that, hey, you're wanted on this team, and we want to see you succeed.
Brody, I would think a distinct advantage. You've been on the other side of that table so many times negotiating. Now being on the other side, I would think, is a distinct advantage, having been in the other role so often.
Players and agents don't want to be in the dark. And the more information they can have that they feel confident in delivering to their players or to themselves, I think it goes a long way in building currency and equity with your guys.
How about gamesmanship? Do you understand as an agent and Do you understand as a general manager that the agent and the general manager are both going to play the game sometimes?
I think we both have to work towards our own agendas, but if we're trying to work in good faith, and hopefully you can build trust over time.
How about you as a guy who was a major agent dealing with a major agent who maybe this whole thing ruffled his feathers like a Boris?
Well, I think that specifically with Scott, not generally, I've had some conversations with his outfit. We had a good meeting at the GM meetings, and we wanted to make it clear that there are players that he represents that we like, both now and in the future, and we want to make sure that we're working with him in a way that, that accomplishes his goals while also serving ours.
So it's obviously it's to his benefit to have every door open, not have some closed. So that's the way he saw it. Did he see it that way, or did he not? He could be pretty stubborn.
Oh, I think he sees it that way, and I hopefully that'll continue with future discussions.
All right, one more. We'll get another one. Tom, who would you like to direct the question to?
Hi, I'd like to ask Mickey.
All right, go ahead.
I love Conforto. I think his defense is underrated, as is, and his arm is really good. But where do you think his best outfield position is? And also, if and when comes back, do you ever envision him moving over to right field to take advantage of his cast of an arm?
Well, I mean, that's something that's been discussed forever. He doesn't like right field, right? He never has. He should have been in right field forever. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore, though, Mickey. That's changed in baseball. They used to always make sure right field arms were right field arms. Cespedes is a born right field arm.
Yeah, he does, and that's a great question. I think that we had an extensive conversation about Michael Conforto today and what his best position is, and I agree with you. His defense in left field, once we put him there last year, full-time, every single day, he played a terrific left field. He cut balls off. He got him in quick with that great, accurate arm you're talking about, and he did a great job. The question with Cespedes, you know, time will tell. I think that we have to evaluate our team at that point, and that's a little bit of ways away. I hope that everybody we have and in our organization is going to do everything to win. I think Cespedes wants to win more than anybody. He's going to make himself available to us and do everything he possibly can to win. He works every single day. I talk to him a lot. That's the one thing people don't understand is how passionate he is about playing the game. Like, he doesn't want to be away. He wants to be on the field, and he works harder than most to get there, that's for sure.
I mean, but here's a perfect example. And Terry told me this. Cespedes told him, I'll play center, I'll play left, I don't like to play right. So here's a guy with a cannon. In the old days, they would have said, you're the right fielder and shut up. They don't do that anymore. I mean, Moose Scarron told a story, and Jeff might have even heard it on the air, where he was in the World Series first inning, and he was coming up with the bases loaded, and he heard the whistle from Casey, and Casey called him back before he ever batted in the game. And he went down, he slammed his bat, he went in the dugout, and Casey called him in there, and the guy who pinch hit for him got a double. And he went in after the game and he said to Casey, he said, when I pull you out of the game, don't ever, ever make a sound. Don't ever. That's a different world. I understand that. That's going back in the 50s. But the point is, he pinched fitting him before you ever hit in the game. I mean, he just decided on pulling him out of the game. So, I mean, that's the old days. They would have said, Cespedes, you're a right fielder, shut up. That day's not here anymore.
Yeah, I think players have to feel comfortable with where they're playing and where they're hitting the lineup. And if you want them to play there, you better have some significant evidence that they're going to have success, and it's going to be for the betterment of the ball club.
So you got to sell them a little bit.
You do. You do. You have to have information that is correct so they know that you're taking care of them and you're taking care of winning for the Mets. And, you know, some outfielders just don't like the way the ball comes off the bat in left or right, way it tails away from them. You know, maybe Cess, you know, just sees the ball better in left field and center and the way it comes off the bat. So there can be so many reasons he's uncomfortable over there, but he seems to be uncomfortable at this moment over there.
Yeah, and it used to be they would take guys and put them in any position during a game. You take a guy, put him here, put him there. They never do that stuff anymore.
No,
it's changed.
Don't.
No, it's completely different. All right, this one's for Jeff. Dan and Danbury. Go ahead, Jeff. Dan, go ahead.
In Reading, the matter.
Go ahead.
Good evening, guys.
Good.
Full disclosure, but I just was curious when Jeff, when Brody, you were interviewing him.
We got a bad connection. Go ahead. Let me hear if we can hear the question. Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
No. Go one more time.
That when you were interviewing Brody for the job,
Oh, I got it. They gave me the question, so I'm sorry. So let me reiterate. Jeff, the question was, and it's one for Brody and Jeff, the idea of when Brody came in to interview for the job, were there any prerequisites that Brody knew about as far as payroll, as far as certain things that he knew were going to be part of the job he wouldn't even have come in for an interview? Were there any preconceived things that had to be discussed before you had, or was it a regular interview?
No, it was a regular interview to start, and we evaluated all the candidates on the same level. And then as we got further along into the second round of interviews and such, we then had a conversation on what the payroll and what the roster construction would look like and what Brody wanted to do, not only in the major league roster, but like he said before, having some money and having some resources to evaluate the rest of the talent in the organization outside of the baseball players.
Brody, you didn't need this job. What would have been, or what was a prerequisite? What did you have to hear? That's a good question he asked. What did you have to hear to take the job?
I wouldn't have been interested in the job if there was any even glimpse of a rebuild mindset. You know, I wouldn't leave the position that I had to just tear something down and be motivated to lose 100 games a year. I'm just not wired that way. I had too much of a good thing going. And as soon as I understood that Jeff and the ownership group had motivation to win every year, then I felt like I can add value to that.
So that's what he needed. What did you need to hear from him that he made him the man?
I think his commitment to excellence and his drive to change the culture around our ball club, Major League, and the staff, and really build a collaborative relationship with everybody within the organization and also our fan base.
You didn't hire Mickey and now he's your manager. Does that change in any way your relationship is how you view his job going long term? Does it change it at all that he wasn't your hire?
No, I don't think so. But one of the things that he and I have both committed to over the course of the last several weeks, I mean, Mickey has a place here. He's been here. We've spent about as much time with each other as I have with my wife over the course of the last 3 weeks. And so I think it's important to me, and hopefully he feels the same, is that we need to understand our pulse and our rhythm with each other and make sure that we're communicating as effectively as we need to be.
All right, before I say goodbye, I always let you guys do this. Mickey, give you a chance. Tell the audience, your Met fans, what they can expect and what's your message to the Met fans as you hit this holiday season as far as your expectations as you get ready for the winter meetings and everything else.
I think it's going to be an exciting winter. We've already started it. There's more to be done, and we need to win more for you guys. That's the bottom line. We do everything we can and put ourselves in a spot where we can win, but we need to go out there and actually do it. You know, we can talk as cheap. We got to go out there and win games for you next year, and we appreciate the support. We get support on the road. I've never seen fans like this. You go to Seattle and there's 2,000 fans in the stands in one section, the Seven Lion Army's out there, and it's amazing. And they deserve a winner, and we're going to do everything we can to put one in front of them.
Brody, what's your message?
Trust our process. Be patient and recognize that every decision that we make is not made in a vacuum. So trust our process, and we'll get there.
All right, Jeff, you get the last word. What is it?
Well, first of all, thank you for having
My
us.
My pleasure. Mike. Thank you guys for coming. I appreciate
it. Great, and we appreciate it. And I think our fans have to know that we want to win. And we're committed to putting a team on the field that they're going to be proud of, to root for, and be a Met fan.
And, Brody, don't come back till you bring me another player, okay?
So, yeah.
don't come back till you bring me somebody good, okay?
Mike, can we schedule one next week so we go get another one this week?
Thank you, Mickey, for coming in. Appreciate it very
Thanks
much.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much, Brody. So, Mickey and Brody, and, of course, Jeff Wilpon, thank you, guys. They're all waiting for you. So, we'll take a break, which we have in an hour and a half. So, we'll see you in about an hour. Now, we'll be back in a couple of minutes.